Good morning. You're listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm Arcy Chapa. This morning, we're talking about the upcoming National Latino Writers Conference at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, scheduled for May 19th through the 22nd. Now in its eighth year, the conference has become one of the most important writers' conference in the country for aspiring Latino authors. Nationally known authors, agents, and editors come together for the three-day event to share works in progress and receive constructive feedback. Joining us this morning to talk more about National Latino Writers Conference are my guests, Carlos Vasquez. Carlos is the Director of History and Literary Arts at the National Hispanic Cultural Center and the founder of the National Latino Writers Conference. Through the use of oral history, Dr. Vasquez has created and directed exhibits on the history of some of New Mexico's oldest communities, including his latest book, Varelas a través de los años, which was published in its second edition this year. Also in the studio, we have Demetria Martinez. Demetria is an award-winning author, activist, lecturer, and columnist. Her books include the widely translated novel Mother Tongue. Her autobiographical essay, Confessions of a Berlitz Tape Chicana, won the 2006 International Latino Book Award in the category of Best Biography. She is also the author of two books of poetry, Breathing Between the Lines and The Devil's Workshop. Also joining us by phone this morning is Luis Alberto Urrea. Luis is a 2005 Pulitzer Prize finalist for nonfiction and member of the Latino Literature Hall of Fame. The critically acclaimed author of 11 books, Urrea is an award-winning poet and essayist. The Devil's Highway, his 2004 nonfiction account of a group of Mexican immigrants lost in the Arizona desert, won the 2004 Lannan Literacy Award and was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the Pacific Rim Kiriyama Prize. Also joining us by phone from her home in Corales is Gloria Zamora. Gloria has been awarded the Premio Aslan Literacy Prize for her memoir, Sweet Nata, Growing Up in Rural New Mexico. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Carlos,
good morning.
I mentioned at the top that this conference is just 8 years, in just 8 years, has become one of the most important writers' conference in the country for aspiring Latino writers. Why do you think that is?
There's an incredible productivity going on in the writing among Latinos and Latinas across the country, not only in the Southwest, but very much so on the East Coast and both coasts, really. And we have been able to attract, I think, some of the major writers, some of the most successful, some of the most productive writers as faculty. And that has had a lot to do with attracting people to come to it. Mm-hmm. And we do get a really good cross-section of people from the United States. Last year we had people from 18 different states in the union come. And we get a very good quality of people, people that are serious about their writing, whether or not they've been published before. They are, for the most part, aspiring to be published. But in many cases, it's the craft and the love of the craft that that bring them here. And the level of talent and the level of productivity makes it really quite easy for us to put together a conference in which we only, by the way, allow 50 people as registrants. And that intimacy and those 3 days are really productive and really worthwhile for people's time.
Would you agree, Luis?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's... I always tell people it's becoming our raza bread loaf, you know. It's turning into this major literary tradition. And I have to say that students that I had have gone on already to publish things. I think about Aaron Morales, you know, who came out of the workshop and did a chapbook that's now been picked up as a novel from a New York publisher. It's very exciting to see it happen.
Now, Demetria, what are your thoughts on the conference?
Well, I think one of the things that's exciting for me is, and for those who come, is that you know you're not alone. You're in community. And writing is such a solitary activity to begin with. And so I think the opportunity to come to a conference like this, to talk with others, to share your work, and to, like I said, know that you're not the only person in the world, you know, writing, and that others share similar struggles. And so I think what happens at the workshop, there's the classes, which are critical, the workshops. But I think what happens outside is just as critical, too. And that is people getting to know one another and to, again, build a community that can sustain itself, a community of writers that can sustain itself throughout the year, so that when they come back, and they often do, they'll have even more work to show.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gloria, I want to hear your thoughts about it.
Okay, when I went, I realized that I was nowhere ready for publishing, and that's what it taught me, that I had to get a lot more done, that I had to get a lot more work into it, that I had to do more research, and it really helped me to listen to people who had been successful, but also to those people there that were trying like me, just to write the books and write something that could finally get published someday.
Now, you have been awarded the Premio Aslan Literacy Prize. Tell me what that means to you.
Wow. That's the best word I can describe it with. I'm really honored. I think it is such a compliment to me. I feel like someone else understood why I wrote the book. You know, it was to teach younger people and anyone who read it about Chicano culture. And I am awed. I am very, very honored to have gotten the award.
So, Carlos, talk about the Premio Aslan Literacy Prize.
The Premio Aslan was established in the 1980s by Rudy and I and his wife Patricia, who, may she rest in peace, passed away a few months ago. And it was located at the University of New Mexico and Zimmerman Library. And Maria Teresa Marquez, more than anyone, I think, was responsible for making sure that that went on an orderly basis, on a yearly basis. And then three years now, it was decided to move the prize to the National Hispanic Cultural Center and be part of the National Latino Writers Conference. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've been doing. So we've taken responsibility for that. And the idea with that prize, because we give two prizes, that prize is to identify an up-and-coming writer, someone that's published one book, but who really shows in that one book and their efforts to get that book out, a commitment to the craft of writing and a sensibility to being part of a community, as Demetra so well put it a while ago. Our second prize is dedicated for the Premio Aslan is given out every year. The National Hispanic Cultural Center Literary Prize is given out every 2 years. That prize is given to someone that has a demonstrable body of work and that has been productive. And moreover, it's somebody that is begin to be effective with other Latino writers. And in some cases, like in the case of Luis, are also people that have not let their celebrity or their success go to their head and understand that we are still struggling to get our people published, to get our people where they need to be in the world of writing, and sometimes take chances by speaking out, by talking back, and by making sure that our presence is known, not just because of our numbers, but because of our quality and because of our the stature of our writing.
Now, I was reading that you started this event with one ad in Poets and Writers, and that from that ad alone, registration filled up quickly, and you ended up with a wait list of 13 authors from around the country. So you were quoted as saying you knew you were onto something. So did you feel that there was a need for a conference like this?
No, the need was there. We were mm-hmm. very clear about that. But mm-hmm. we were only 3 years old in 2003 at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. And it took a little bit of prodding on the part of one of my interns, Lucinda Lucero Sachs, who was then getting her master's in creative writing here at UNM. And she said, let's go for it. Let's do this conference. I'm a little more conservative than that. I didn't know that we had even the space to do it. We did it, and it was such a success, we haven't stopped since. And now I think we have a sense of responsibility to keep it going. And it hasn't been easy. It doesn't cost that much. But these days, $300 for almost any writer is an investment. So we make sure that it's worth their time. It's worth their time in the quality of faculty they bring together. It's worth their time in the amenities that we provide, because we provide their meals and provide workshops and panels with editors, publishers, agents, in addition to the teaching workshops. And as Luis mentioned, more than half a dozen people have had the work published over the 8 years as a result of being at the conference. And other things have happened. We had two agents a couple of years ago, last year I guess it was, merged their two agencies together, and now it's a bi-coastal agency, where one was on the West Coast, the other was working in New York. And now I think we've got a better way, a web there, to catch some of the people that are coming into the field of writing and into the world of publishing, which is a very difficult world these days.
The world of publishing?
Yes, ma'am.
What is the state of publishing in the U.S.?
Well, like everything else, capital is consolidating. Corporations are consolidating. The bottom line is ruling. That is to say, the big houses, unless you can guarantee them 50,000 imprint, are really not interested, which means that that affects the genre, it affects the quality, it affects the effective writing that you are doing. And so the market begins, or somebody's perceived notion of a market, begins to dictate who gets published and who does not. And even when Latinos get published by the big houses, many times they don't get the support either in the tours or in promotional facilities that they should. And so, yeah, they get one book published and they're sort of hung out to dry. And what we've done is we've invited not only some of the big houses, but it's been the smaller presses that have been the most productive for us and for the people that come to us. So that this year, for example, we have a number of presses who specialize in chapbooks. Poetry is very hard to get published. But there's a way through publishing chapbooks that people can get their work out there. And little by little, the big houses are realizing that there, in fact, is a market out there. And one day, I guess, they'll wake up to exploit it. Meanwhile, we're not waiting. Meanwhile, what we're doing is promoting writing and encouraging writers and connecting writers. And a lot of what goes on at our conference is a really important part of networking. And the people that come get to read their work. This is something I don't know if other conferences do, but little by little, and listening to the people that participate in our conference, we've come to learn that a lot of people need to be heard. They need to have their work heard. They need to have their work read. And we give ample opportunities for that in the 3 days of the conference. And a lot of very interesting things happen from that.
And this is not just for experienced writers. This is for aspiring writers as well.
Everybody that comes to the conference has an opportunity to read their work and be heard by agents, other authors, their fellow writers, and publishers. Publishers pick up materials at our place.
And Luis, I want to hear your experience after I give out the numbers for our listeners to call in and join the conversation. The number to call outside the metropolitan area is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. And Luis, you have been writing about, and this, I'm speaking with Luis Alberto Urrea, you have been writing about the relationship between the United States and Mexico, amongst other things, for 30 years. And as I mentioned earlier, your 2004 nonfiction work, The Devil's Highway, chronicles the fate of the Yuma 14. And I can you can explain the rest of that. But this must be a very interesting time for you, given what's going on with immigration reform. And, you know, some questions I had for you, and sorry to throw these at you so early in the morning. You know, where is Mexico now? Why are people coming here? And why do they risk their lives to come to a place that, that will criminalize them for the act of migrating?
Wow. hey, good morning.
Oh. Okay, you can answer just one of those then.
No, you know, I can tell you in microcosm, letting the people speak for themselves, but, you know, I did a lot of work in the Tijuana garbage dump, you know, the municipal garbage dump on the border where a lot of the people who are heading north come, and not necessarily to cross the border. They just want to get close to the United States, and one of the people working the trash in Tijuana said to me, she was a Chinanteca indigenous woman from, and she said to me, you know, at least here you have garbage. She, you know, the sense that there was no food, there was no work, there was no opportunity. Now, part of the problem I see, you know, in so-called immigration reform and the agitation, the propaganda war that is often launched against us, all you have to do is and everyone on the panel can probably address this, but all you have to do is talk to our young people and see what a burden of shame and guilt they carry on their backs for no reason except for having been born. You know, it's a terrible weight. But a lot of the agitation and argument that is happening is based on false data or old data or just straight propaganda. So, you know, in the question of the Yuma 14, for example, they had come from Veracruz, and some of the hatred poured on some of the people who come north, I hoped to dispel when people might understand that those men who came had been first recruited. They were in an absolute personal catastrophe. The coffee prices had fallen. They had essentially, no food. And the criminal gang that brought them north sent a recruiter down to talk them into coming north. And they had to take a loan to afford the trip. And then the loan came due on them, and they had unwittingly sold themselves into slavery. They were trying to work off the debt to the Coyote organization. It was a very complex thing. We think it's very simple, but in that corridor where those guys crossed, the numbers have dropped upwards of 25% of people heading north, perhaps pushing 27%, according to one of my contacts there right now on the field. Nobody realizes that. A certain percentage, up 7% or more, of the people here have begun heading back home. And the remittance monies that were flowing back into Mexico from the United States started drying up several years ago before the current financial crisis. So I think the paradigm is shifting, but the people who agitate don't recognize that, or they do recognize it, cynically don't convey that information to people.
Right, and you write that, the immigration numbers have been dropping, but the fever pitch of racially motivated rage has gotten hotter.
Yeah, absolutely has. And, certainly things like our financial crisis now don't help, no question. But I think, anybody on the panel can tell you any number of dates down through the 20th century when it's been, it's been expeditious to have a Chicano in the crosshairs for whatever reason. And, we often need the other to vilify. And I've got to say that what happens there in Albuquerque at the Cultural Center is so important and so powerful in so many ways. And I don't mean politically, I don't mean, you hear on the talk radio that these crazy people with this Aztlan thing want to destroy America and replace it with Aztlan and all this talk. I'm talking about just on a spiritual level that art transcends all of this stuff. Art doesn't need papers or documents. Art doesn't get caught by, ICE agents or questioned by anybody. Art speaks across all lines, and it's so fascinating to come and see that we as Latinos, if you want to call it Latinos, I'll say Chicanos or Hispanics, whatever you want to call us, often see ourselves as isolated, I think, and almost regional. And it's really wonderful to see people. I mean, when I was there, we had, like Don Carlos said, we had people from all over the country. We had playwrights from Chicago. We had people from all over the country meeting together. And, where is a playwright from Chicago going to meet Levi Romero and hear his poetry? You know what I mean? It's like a recharging of a spiritual and aesthetic battery when people go there and connect. It's a conspiracy of hope, I'd say.
Thank you. You were just listening to Luis Alberto Uria, and we've got other guests. We're going to take a short break, but also in the studio we have Carlos Vasquez. Carlos is the Director of History and Literacy Arts at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, and also Demetria Martinez. She is an award-winning author, activist, lecturer, and columnist, and we will hear from her also when we come back. And Gloria Zamora. Gloria has been awarded the Premio Aztlan Literacy Prize for her memoir, Sweet Nata, Growing Up in Rural New Mexico. All my guests will return in just a moment after this short break.
Thanks to the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market for donating our early bird prizes for the Spring Pledge Drive. Thanks to everyone who donated by mail, online, or by phone. Thanks to the many organizations and individuals who helped in the phone room and to those who helped with parking and food pickup. Thanks to La Montanita Co-op for donating soft drinks. Thanks to Flying Star for the meals and to Whiting Coffee for the coffee. Together, we are the community power that keeps KUNM going strong. Thanks.
And we're back. You're listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm R.C. Chapa, and this morning we're talking about the upcoming National Latino Writers Conference at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, scheduled for May 19th through the 22nd. I believe we have callers who would like to join the conversation. Again, the numbers are 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. And we have Susana on the line. Susana, good morning.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Well, you know, I just wanted to ask you some questions because I just finished writing a book in Spanish. And I'm a Mexican-American. I was actually, my father is from here, from New Mexico. I live in Corrales. But I want to publish my book, and I don't have no idea what to do.
Carlos, can you help Susana?
This is exactly what the purpose of this conference is. As one of our speakers said a while ago, what she learned when she first went to the conference was that she was not ready to publish her work. Many times people's work is ready, but they don't know how to present it. They don't know how to present it to a publisher. They don't know how to present it to an editor. They don't know whether they need an agent or not. Should they pay an agent? How much should they pay that agent? What is the responsibility of that agent? And there are many horror stories out there of people having very beautiful material that they want to get published. And either it languishes somewhere because a big house optioned on it but is not moving it, or they were not ready to present their material. And so the conference, in addition to taking on the big questions, you know, of plot and of cadence and all of these other things that go into the craft, also offers some really practical advice from people that have experience in how do you prepare a query letter. What should that query letter say? When is your material ready to be seen by an editor? One of the problems that people have sometimes with editors is they want an editor who's gentle with them. And I think what you find out over time is the harder your editor is on you, and mean if you want to use that word, the luckier you are. A tough editor is your best friend. And sometimes people don't realize that. People get frustrated and go off and self-publish their material, which is great if you want to be selling it out of the back of your car and maybe a couple of hundred copies. But if you've got material that needs to get out there, needs to be read, you've got to take that arduous road of trying to get it published. And this is what exactly the conference is meant to do.
We have another caller. We've got Bill on the line. Bill, good morning.
Buenos días de Dios, caballeros y señoras. Quisiera decirles that a good Lord's Day to the people of New Mexico. There was a book mentioned about the devil, the title, The Devil What? I didn't get the whole title, nor the author. I read a book from Northern New Mexico author. My mind is frozen on his name, but it's The Devil's Hat Band. Also, I have a current event. This Saturday, at the Hispana Cultural Center, we're going to be discussing, we have funds, dignitaries from all over the Latino world are coming this Saturday from 10 till noon to discuss a museum in Washington, D.C. for the Hispanic people. The Native Americans received their museum about 5 years ago. Funds have already been developed for these museums. They want suggestions from New Mexicans. We're the smallest state population of Spanish people that they're coming to see. They're going all over the United States, these people, and they're going to have suggestions from the people of New Mexico in this meeting. It's this Saturday from 10 to 4. It's a current event. I wish everybody was there. I'm also concerned that one of your guests was not Eduardo Garcia, profesor de UNM, who is an author too. I enjoy his books, and buenos dias, and have a good day.
Thank you, Bill. Carlos, do you know more about that?
Yes. As you know, there's an initiative at the national level to have a Latino museum in Washington, D.C., and they're going about the country getting input from different communities. It is in no way do we see it a competition with us. It is mm-hmm. something we are national, but it is something that is going to represent all the different Latino strands of people in this country. And it's going to be a couple of years before things get really rolling on it. But the commitment is there. The initiative is there. As the speaker said, some funding is there to begin the feasibility studies for this museum. Mm-hmm. And, of course, here in New Mexico and here in Albuquerque, the event is going to be held at our place, the National Hispanic Cultural Center, between 10 and 12. Mm-hmm. And it goes into the afternoon as well.
Now, Dimitria, you have been a faculty member for the National Latino Writers Conference for 2 years and will again this year teach workshops on writing the memoir, mm-hmm. correct? And a little bit more about you. I didn't have a chance to really give everybody's introduction because everybody's introductions are so long. I was going to run out of breath. But you were trained at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs, and you teaches annual writing workshops. Is that you're still doing
yes,
that?
Yes, in Boston.
In Boston. And also there's a little bit more history about you. You were the religion editor at the Albuquerque Journal in the 80s, working part-time while writing poetry. In 1987, you were indicted on charges of conspiracy relating to smuggling refugees from El Salvador to the U.S., and you were acquitted the following year. So I'm sure you have a lot to say about what's going on right now with immigration reform. What are your thoughts at this point? Some of the same questions that I asked Luis. I mean, if you remember what I asked him.
Well, we certainly need comprehensive immigration reform. And I think one of the things that's so frightening for me right now and for my fellow activists working on immigration issues is the breakup of families. Where you have situations, for example, the husband's working in a poultry factory. The migra comes, takes him away to a detention center, and he doesn't come home. The children's there. The children are there. The wife is there, and they don't know where the father went. It's like some perverse version of the rapture. And so we're seeing this, families being broken up by raids and deportations. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really critical in all of this. We're also seeing record number of deaths of people who are crossing from Mexico into the United States on foot. And among those are growing numbers of women and children. It's so bad that people in Arizona had to start a DNA project, a human remains project, so that when they go out and find bodies, they can take DNA and hopefully be able to use that to confirm that person's identity when relatives call or come looking from Mexico, call, for example, the Mexican consulate. And so it's really, really tragic. And it's estimated that at least one person a day dies crossing the desert on foot. Mm-hmm. I think that any – we need to look – you can't criminalize people who are hungry and coming here because of that out of desperation. I think people have often have a strange idea that migrants just come here because they want, quote unquote, a better life. It's deeper than that. It's more profound than that. It's that they're desperate, and nobody wants to leave home. And so I think we'll be watching very closely what the discussions are around immigration reform. And it's also spoken about, reform is often spoken about in narrow terms, about immigrants contribute to the economy. Well, they contribute to so much more to our lives as in the United States, culturally, the language, the food, the spirit of their spirituality. They have a transformative effect. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful on our own population, and we don't see that. We see mm-hmm. them only as either, you know, either good for the economy or bad for the economy. We don't see the person. And I think one of the things that Luis has done that has been so critical is put a human face on these statistics, has taken, you know, a person and...
Well, I guess maybe the question that I had was, why do they risk their lives to come to a place that will criminalize them for migrating? And I don't know if you have an answer for that, or if Luis has an answer for that, or Grace, or Carlos. I mean,
I think it's the level of desperation.
It's the level of desperation.
I don't think we really appreciate the disparity between what we have and we do in this country and what is reality just a couple hundred miles south of us. And more importantly, people don't realize the connection between the two. We must understand that in our economy, structured into our economy, is the labor force that has no rights, no right to organize, and no defense. Illegal labor, if you want to call it that, was critical in the shops moving from New York City to Los Angeles, in the clothing industry, for example, to get away from unions and being able to depend on a labor force that is there, that you can count on, and that you can get rid of anytime that you need to. And this is the part of the debate that I don't think gets enough attention. So we're constantly blaming others for some of the dislocations that we cause ourselves.
One of the things that I think I would like to see happen is to refer to immigrants as displaced people. They're displaced, for example, by free trade agreements, different types of economic arrangements, and this is not only Mexico, U.S., this is around the world. People are displaced by environmental disasters, and I think that the word displaced helps us to understand why people are coming, and it's something that we need to think about, because otherwise we're talking about immigrants and then people who are against any kind of immigration reform, you know, to them they're just illegal aliens. And we've got to understand that context. We've got to understand, for example, that NAFTA is what pushed so many people off of their lands and made them come north. And but I can't emphasize enough that this is a global phenomenon.
Luis, I know.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, yeah, Mexico. If you go to Mexico. They feel invaded from the south, and they complain about the Guatemalans sneaking into Mexico. It is a global thing, and as I said earlier, it's also a propaganda war. You know, it's a question of terminology. Mm-hmm. If people were seen as refugees, perhaps there'd be a different attitude about them. And it always strikes me as odd that a lot of the anger and rage and even violent rhetoric seems to come from, I hate to say it, but religious circles in this country. And you know, every once in a while, somebody snaps too and looks at Bible and says, "Well, how does the Bible attack so-called illegal immigrants?" And it does not. It's quite in sympathy with the refugee and the stranger and the visitor who needs help. You know, and there was a wonderful. I had an amazing event at Hope College up in Michigan, a Christian college. They had an immigration week, and I didn't know how it would be received. But in fact, they had been doing Bible studies about immigration, and they had printed up T-shirts that said, you know, WWJD. But instead of "What would Jesus do?", the subheading under WWJD said, "Who would Jesus deport?" And they put these out to all the students to make them think. You know, we lose sight of the humanity. And like I said earlier, if you're hungry, if your children are in danger and hungry, you have to do what you have to do. And, you know, I won't – my supervisory agent from the Border Patrol who helped me learn things for my book is listening. I won't embarrass him by naming him. But he said to me in the middle of the desert one day, you know, if my wife were starving, I would enter any country in the world to feed her. Mm-hmm. People on a human level, face-to-face, understand. It's when it becomes a war of words and symbols and propaganda, when the humanity disappears. Humanity, you know, it's uncomfortable. Humanity is too complicated, and it's too personal. Whereas numbers, propaganda, bluster, posturing, that's easy.
Mm-hmm. Well, Luis, I know you have to go soon, so I wanted to ask you a couple other questions.
Yeah.
And maybe you can talk a little bit about Hummingbird's Daughter and Into the Beautiful North. I don't remember the chronology of which one came first, but I did read that you wrote that Rodolfo Anaya has been a godfather to you for so long that it was a nice little tip of the hat to have Rudy Anaya in Hummingbird's Daughter. So give us a little bit about that, and then we'll say goodbye.
Okay. Yeah, I have my day job. Rudy, who among us has not been blessed by Rudy one way or another? You know, when I was first starting out, he was one of the authors that I met. He was very kind to me. But, you know, the Hummingbird's Daughter is the story of my great aunt, the Saint of Cabora, Teresita Urrea, who was known as, the Joan of Arc of Mexico and the patron saint of the Yaqui people. But, you know, she was essentially an hechicera, a curandera. So where would I be without having studied Bless Me Ultima? You know, without Ultima, there's no Hummingbird's Daughter. And I just wanted to mention to that woman who called in earlier with her book, it took me 20 years to write Hummingbird's Daughter. So sometimes it's a lot of struggle, like Carlos said, and it took me 10 years to publish my first book because nobody would publish it. So you have to stick to your guns. And somebody like Rudy, who's always there, steadfast with support, you know, he's given me a bed to sleep in more than once. And I know he's fed and clothed other Latino Hispano writers out there in need. He's offered a helping hand, and he's offered an inspiration, and he's offered sometimes scoldings when we're off base. He's our tío. I hope Rudy comes to the thing because I dedicate my award to Rudy because without him, there's no me.
Well, Luis, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And when will he be here, Carlos?
He will be here May 19th to the 22nd, mm-hmm. and then he'll be back in June, and we're trying to work out an arrangement between ourselves and Bookworks so we can make it a nice event when he comes to present the paperback edition of To the Beautiful North.
Okay. Well, Luis, thank you so much, and I think he's already gone. Carlos, help me talk to Gloria about her book. Tell me about her book, and maybe, and Gloria, you can talk about it too, but I'll let Carlos introduce you.
Well, Gloria is one of us. She was a orthodontist assistant, and as her day job, and she began to come around to the National Hispanic Cultural Center as a volunteer and a docent. She worked with us on putting together a history of and an exhibit of the history of Atrisco, the oldest community, one of the oldest communities here in Albuquerque. That's how we first got to know her. And I think she already had the seed of her book in her mind and in her heart. She began the book. She encountered a personal tragedy of losing her husband halfway through doing the book. She was committed enough to the process that she completed the book. It may even have made it a better book, I don't know. But one thing is very clear, that it touches people. And it touches people here in New Mexico because we are quickly, consistently losing much of our cultural innocence and isolation that kept us together for so many years. And I think people feel a nostalgia for that, and they want to hang on to it. As a historian, memoirs like hers are primary sources for us. There are sometimes nowhere else to go but some of these memoirs. Mm-hmm. And Gloria, I think, in addition to having a creative mind, also has an investigator's mind and a researcher's mind. And she took the time to do oral history mm-hmm. with a lot of people, as well as dipping into her own memory and bringing forth what is a very beautiful book.
Gloria, I'm going to let you talk about your book in just a moment. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with my guest.
Thank you.
UNM's Institute for Medieval Studies presents Love in the Middle Ages, Monday, April 12th, with a 7:15 lecture, and Tuesday, April 13th through Thursday, April 15th, with events at 5:15 and 7:15. All lectures in Woodward 101 on the UNM campus. On Thursday, the 5:15 concert will be in Keller Hall. This event is open to the public. For more information, call 277-1191. A message from the tax-exempt UNM Institute for Medieval Studies.
And we're back. You are listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9, MRC Chapa. Joining me this morning to talk about the National Latino Writers Conference at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, scheduled for May 19th through the 22nd, are Carlos Vasquez. Carlos is the Director of History and Literacy Arts at the National Hispanic Cultural Center. Also, Demetria Martinez, an award-winning author, activist, lecturer, and columnist. And Gloria Zamora. Gloria has been awarded the Premio Aslan Literacy Prize for her memoir, Sweet Nata, Growing Up in Rural New Mexico. We've got, and Demetria, I also want to talk to you about the memoir. But Gloria, tell us a little bit about why you felt the need or the strong need to write Sweet Nata, Growing Up in Rural New Mexico.
Mainly, I wrote it for my grandchildren. I wanted them to get to know who their grandparents were and their great-grandparents and the grandparents beyond that as well. And I was writing for them. I was writing for my dad. My dad used to always share stories, and they were getting forgotten, some of them, you know. And so I wanted them written down so that they wouldn't get forgotten. And I was writing to promote the culture because, like Carlos said, it's disappearing. We're losing it because we don't live in small communities anymore. Now it's with internet and everything else, we're all kind of in touch with the whole world, which is good. But what I'm saying is that we're losing what we had, that closeness of family and friends and neighbor. And so I wanted to write those things so they wouldn't, mainly an honor for the people that lived before. And in Thanksgiving, too, for my grandparents and my parents. So that's what my book really, it was first done. It was going to be a Christmas present. And my husband was doing illustrations, and I would give a story at a time with the illustrations. And they were comical and wonderful at the same time, and everybody loved them. But when people started reading my stories at a workshop and liking them, I thought, well, you know, maybe they're for more than just my family.
So you thought there was something there. Demetria, you're going to be teaching workshops on writing the memoir this
Correct.
Year, and you've
mm-hmm.
taught it before.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to Gloria, I'm sure that, you know, this brings back or helps you realize how important they are for
Good morning.
Memoirs are for
this is
preservation
Performance,
of history
New Mexico.
And culture.
Mm-hmm.
And
for
and
Thursday,
talk about
April
that.
8th,
how important are
here's
they?
A look at some shows
Absolutely
on
critical,
area
as,
stages.
As Carlos was saying.
Three Days of Rain opens tomorrow night at the Auxiliary Dog Theater, 3011 Monta Vista Northeast in Albuquerque.
We're just
Richard Greenberg's
of our
play follows
in some
a
ways.
Man.
I mean,
well,
we're only 500 years old, so to speak, as a people. And so to tell one story, to write memoir, to put it out there, is a way of letting the world know that we exist. And there has been a renaissance in the writing of memoir. And what impresses me the most, too, and I think this is really important to state, when I taught memoir last year, there were a lot of people that were only beginners. And I think we need to emphasize that, you know, you may be a beginner, you may not, maybe haven't written, you know, very much in your life. But I was really impressed by how many people had the courage to come in and say, Demetria, you know, I really don't quite know how to do this. This manuscript has been sitting in a drawer now, you know, mm-hmm. for 6 months. Or it's, you know, it's in the computer and it's, you know, I haven't printed it out. I mean, really at that stage. And what the writing workshop does is people get excited. They say, oh, my God, I'm going to the writer's workshop. You know, I better pull something together. And so this, I think, is another wonderful thing about the workshop is you dust off that manuscript that's been sitting in your file box, you know, for half a year, and you start to work on it because you want to have something to present. And in my memoir class, I there are a lot of people who aren't ready to show their work to publishers and yet feel welcome by the conference, by the people who are part of the conference, by the faculty. You know, we make them feel welcome and encourage them to go on with to carry on from the part that they're at. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether they've written 10 pages or 2 pages. I think the other thing that's important about memoir is so many people come up to me during these conferences and say, I don't have a story to tell. You know, who am I to write? Mm-hmm. Gloria Anzaldúa, the great author, has written a lot about this. You know, who am I? And Latinos, I think, you know, often that's even a greater issue. You know, my parents were migrants in the lettuce fields. You know, who am I to write, to tell my story? And then they start to tell me about their lives, and I'm like, you know, falling off the chair. What, you know, you got to be kidding. You know, if that is an incredible story that you're telling me. So we tend very often to undervalue our stories, undervalue what our own personal history. And I think one of the purposes of the conference is to validate people, validate especially the beginners, validate them and say, you do have something to say, you do have something to tell. And then the rest, then the craft piece, the part of it can be taken care of, that can be addressed. But first you have to have people feeling like I have a story to tell, and I'm going to tell it.
Well, what advice would you give someone who thinks they have, I mean, everybody's got a story. Everybody has history. Everybody has culture. How do you start writing? What's the first step?
Well, I'm from the butt in the chair school of writing. you begin by sitting down, staring at that blank page, saying a prayer, and you just start writing. And I often emphasized what I emphasize in terms of the process of writing is, first of all, there's never going to be a perfect time to write, never. And so what you do is you begin to incorporate into your life a writing habit. I wrote Mother Tongue, which is written as a memoir, even though it's fiction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in 50 minutes every other day. And so that's one thing that I really emphasize is that consistency is more important than quantity, and don't wait for that perfect time. Just write a little something every day. It adds up. Mm-hmm. I also encourage people to carry their manuscripts with them everywhere that they go. So that when they're sitting at the lobby of the doctor's office or whatever, they're reading what they've written and staying in touch with it. Because the biggest danger that writers face is that they put their manuscript away and, well, I'll work on it next week or I'll work on it in mm-hmm. a couple days, and they lose touch with it. Right. And or else the manuscript stays in the computer, sort of like a ghost in a machine. And so
that haunts you.
It haunts you in more ways than one. And so I emphasize, you know, print it out, carry it with you. Let that manuscript, let that memoir become a part of your daily life, writing. Or if you can't get to writing that day, then reading it. And so these are one of the things that I address, and I get a lot of response from it because, again, it's easy enough to teach the craft of memoir in many ways. What's difficult is to deal with the ways in which we self-sabotage and avoid writing. Mm-hmm. And so so for me, the sign of success is, you know, I get an email after the conference or whatever, a person saying, I kept on writing. That conference kept me writing. It gave me the energy that I needed and the inspiration I needed to keep on writing after the conference. What happens after the conference is as critical as what, mm-hmm. if not more, than what happens during the conference.
And I'm sure, Carlos, you would like for everybody to just start writing their memoirs, because at the Cultural Center, you're charged with documenting and preserving Hispanic history, culture, and literature. And I read you have a permanent collection, which encompasses about 14,000 books, full-text electronic databases, 2,000 rolls of microfilm, hundreds of video and audio tapes and manuscripts and photo archives. And they're all concentrated on the history of Hispanics worldwide with the folks. So, I mean...
Exactly, and we try to support our faculty, not only the 3 days that they're teaching, but year-round. I have a friend in Texas whose slogan is a page a day, a book a year. Mm-hmm. And that is really one of the biggest challenges, to get people to get into the discipline of writing. It hurts. It hurts. Mm-hmm. And if it's good, it hurts a lot. And what we try to do is give people a place where they can be with others. And
hurt together,
and they feed off one another.
Yeah.
And really, people go away. The biggest problem we have with our writers' conference is getting people to go home on Saturday after the 3 days. That's a serious statement. They want to hang around. They want to be with one another, and relationships and networks are built that continue.
We have a caller who would like to join the conversation. Susan, good morning.
Yes, hi. It reminded me when you said someone was saying, you know, why am I important because I come from a family that picked lettuce. Well, I took a wonderful Chicano literature course with, I think, Dr. Marquez over at the University of New Mexico, more than 10 years ago, and it was a there were novels and there was books that were written by people who were telling their story, and one was by Tomas Rivera, Y no se lo tragó la tierra, which the earth just won't swallow me. And I still have the book. It's a paperback, and one side is English and one side is Spanish, and it was a wonderful book about this young boy's life. I mean, it's probably one of the very well-known books if you take any Chicano literature course, but it's in terms of knowing someone's life and what they went through. I mean, everyone goes through things, and you have to record it for people to understand where they came from. And once Chicano Lit became part of the courses that you take for a good literature education, really puts a history to the people that are going through whatever they're going through now. And that's very important, to know your history, and for us to know histories of people and how they got to where they are and what the injustices are.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. Carlos.
She brings up a really important point. Chicano literature, Latino literature, is no longer at the fringes of American literature. Mm-hmm. We are part of the American canon of literature. Some people can't get used to that yet, but they will have to. If people take the time to really read our stuff, they will understand that we are still telling the American story. Mm-hmm. We're not foreigners to it. We're not aliens to it. It is the latest slice of the American dream and the American story. And if sometimes it's a little shabby, it's because we've allowed it to be shabby. But good writers tell the truth. Good writers bring to the fore the emotion as well as the intellect. And I'm glad that this lady had that experience, because we are part of the American canon now.
And a young writer wrote in La Bloga, where there's a lot of writing about this conference, saying, and this might sum up the show, the National Latinos Writers Conference is an impeccably executed conference with full of expertise and support. And for this young writer, just the right introduction to the community I never knew I had. It's a community, right?
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
And when is it?
May 19th to the 22nd, 2010.
At the National Hispanic Cultural Center. All right. Well, that's all our time we have. Thank you, my guests this morning, Carlos Vasquez, Demetria Martinez, and Gloria Zamora. Thank you for joining us this morning. Our engineer this morning was Shane Montoya. Our call screener was John Burgund. I'm RC Chapa. Thanks for listening.